This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. I thank our audience out there for joining us. As I say every single time, it's always a privilege to get in front of the mic and drop some bits of knowledge and introduce you guys to some people that you guys might not already know, and today is no exception. Our guest has shown up on the scene most recently, and he's been all over my LinkedIn feed and all over my, all over the feed because he's doing some cool stuff. And so I'm going to introduce you guys to Matt. Matt, why don't you give our audience a little bit of an insight as to who Matt is first, and then we'll talk a little bit about why you've been all over the interwebs with some cool stuff you got going on.
Well, Jeremy, thank you for having me, and apologies up front for having to see all of my stuff all the time.
No, it's all good. I love it. When after you and I got connected, I was like, oh man, this guy's a mover and a shaker, man. He's all over the place. I love it. I'm excited to hear. I mean, I know what you guys do, but I'm more excited for our audience to hear a little bit about who you are and why you feel so passionate about the industry that you've been working in for the last number of years.
Yeah, look, I'm an ex-restaurant guy who, fumbled his way into tech, and it's one of those things that after spending, the better part of the decade running businesses, running restaurants to finally get some smart tech guys to build out all of the dream things you've always wanted. And that's kind of my story. And that's kind of how we got here.
I love it. And so we'll get into the tech here in a few minutes, but I'd love your insight, because I think people underestimate those two businesses, which a lot of our longtime listeners know that I've been dealing with both restaurants and technology for a long time. And everybody thinks it's super simple to run a restaurant. And quite frankly, just give the coder some specs and they'll just go write it up. And it always shows up exactly how you want it to. Which one's harder?
The restaurant, no question. I mean, we'd spoken about this earlier, but my hat's off to everybody out there running restaurants. I mean, you have to wear so many hats, from the customer service aspect to the leadership aspect. It's a tall order, and I really appreciate everything they do.
I love it. So why don't you share with our audience a little bit more about what you guys are doing at ClearCogs, and kind of what is it and where did it come from? What itch have you been scratching as it relates to the tech that again you got to experience when you were running restaurants, and why you think it's so important for our audience to hear more about it?
Yeah, and it's really not that complicated what we do. We provide predictive forecasting for restaurants so they know what they need to prep every day. I mean, I spent years with Excel spreadsheets and, trying to come up with average sales and, keep your UPKs and PARs up to date. And, it was part art, part science. And, we've really honed in on the science part of that. And, what I think is really interesting is in almost every industry, you see the Amazons of the world, right? That are leveraging technology to make data-driven decisions in their businesses and prepare for those. And that's how you get to Amazon. That's why the post office is the post office, and why Amazon can get you something the same day. Yep. And we see it going into grocery stores are doing things like this. But when it comes to restaurants, the large majority of people are just still guessing.
I guess I'm going to take a step back real quick and ask you the question. So you had to kind of come up with some of the stuff on your own. The problem, as you've alluded to, is not new. Grocery stores have been doing it. Retailers have been doing it forever. Grocery's been doing it for a long time. And unless it's during COVID or it's during all of these supply chain issues and you're in Ukraine right now or in Russia right now, when there's truly other outside factors, for the most part, we as Americans are used to walking into a grocery store and having bread on the shelf, but also not going to the back of the grocery store and having, cases and cases of bread that they throw away if they're doing it right. But restaurants, as you are well aware, don't do that. They don't really have tools, or they figured it out on their own the hard way as it relates to this. Why do you think it is that they don't have that data, or there's not somebody that's already kind of done this and skin this cat quite yet?
I think there's two reasons. One, you think about the assistant manager working that night shift, and it's, you know, do I need to prep more chicken or do I need to bake more bread? And that guy has two options. One, if I try and not have too much waste and I mess it up, I'm getting a call from the owner or the CEO who's going to ream me out for running out of product. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, there's a really big disincentive to run out. And then, you know, if you waste $15 in bread, it probably doesn't even really affect your food cost that much on a percentage base at the end of the week. So there's not a really big repercussion for wasting a lot. But what ends up happening is those, you know, those pennies add up, those dollars start to add up and they compound on themselves. So it ends up being a bigger problem than you'd think. And then the other one that, you know, we see is there's a slight mismatch of incentives sometimes between franchisors and franchisees. I mean, you got a franchisor and they, you know, they want to help their franchisees out. They want to give them tools, but they are compensated with royalties. So a lot of times their natural focus ends up being more along the lines of how do we increase the top line revenues, and isn't as, you know, they don't feel the same pain as the operator, you know, that lives on the bottom line.
Well, I'm going to give you two quick stories and I'd love to have your take on it. First, was the only job I've ever been fired from. I was in high school. I was working at a pizza joint and the owner actually fired me because he accused me of making pizzas towards the latter part of the night so that I could take them home, because the policy was always, you know, whatever was left, because it was one of those pizza joints that had pizza up in the window and you could get pizza by the slice. And he had accused me. It's literally the only, and I'm like, what, are you kidding me? Like, because I actually hadn't done it. I could see how that could be a back to your disincentive. And then the second story, and I just love your take on it, is I was at one of those, what I call Chipotle style pizza places where, you know, it's, yeah. they press the dough and then they, you know, it was a Blaze Mod Pizza, something like that. And I watched them throw away half a dozen doughs that they had made, had proofed and weren't good to produce. And I look at that, and to your point, I'd love kind of your take on either of those as it relates to kind of what you guys are doing, because I think it's critical to have people make sure that they understand this stuff is happening within your restaurants, whether you know it or not. These kind of things are happening. And back to the artful approach, and I'd love to get your take on that here in a little bit about how you guys got to the place. But give me your take on either of those stories, and you know, you can pick on me all you want for 16-year-old Jeremy who might have wanted a slice of pizza before he left.
You know, I actually think the problem a little bit is in the industry. We hear a lot of our food costs are great, you mm-hmm. know, compared to other brands, right? And it's almost that the bar is set really low on what is acceptable for waste in a restaurant, which is a totally different argument than what is actually solvable. And a lot mm-hmm. of this waste, you know, wasn't solvable 5 or 10 years ago. But again, the Amazons and Walmarts of the world that have put a lot of effort into machine learning and AI, you know, have kind of paved the road where now we've reached this point where solving, you know, lower dollar items such as, you know, over prep waste can be solved with technology and can be done so in a cost effective manner.
Well, and I think the thing that, and we had a guest on probably 6 months ago who was doing some machine learning and AI related to labor management. And I think it's not too dissimilar where it's like, you know what, while there's a little bit more maybe rules around some of that labor management, because you got certain laws in certain states that say you have to work a minimum amount of hours and end, I think that all too often, so many of these restaurateurs took an artisan approach where it's like, well, no, I know how many burgers we need to prep. I know how many chicken breasts we need to prep because I've been here for 40 years. And to your comment, there's not been the data, nor has there been, I don't say an app or just even a way to get to that data predictively enough to be able to make better business decisions. So tell me your take on that.
Yeah. So first off, let me just on the labor side of things, it turns out that forecasting for labor and forecasting for food are two totally different.
Yep. Way too often.
Yeah. I mean, when we're looking at just raw sales numbers, it's really easy to just forecast what the sales will be tomorrow. When you start looking at things like, you know, how many bagels do I need in the last hour of breakfast. These are things that are impacted greatly by the quality of the data, which in restaurants typically is not very high, and the accuracy of your forecasting models. And so we saw that as an area that was completely underserved and not being addressed. And it's not something that you can just take a one-size-fits-all algorithm and throw on top of it. You know, we don't view ourselves as being a tech solution that you buy like a laptop and that's the laptop you have. We view ourselves as a partner, your forecasting vendor. We build crystal balls, and our job is to build the crystal ball for you and have you be able to point it at the areas that you need to forecast. Mm-hmm. And as the technology changes, you know, and gets better, you know, we're there to constantly improve that technology versus, you know, a lot of, especially in the restaurant world, you buy a product and that tends to just be the product and it doesn't yep. really change. You know, that's not how we view ourselves.
I love that. Sorry, go for it.
I would say, what was the second part of your question?
The second part, or at least what I'm thinking as you've been going through that is really the whole idea. And you've said you guys have created this, you know, this ability to get to the data and figure out how to forecast. Talk to me in real life. What does that actually look like? Because I think too many people from our audience don't quite understand the power of having large amounts of data, large amounts of sales data, large amounts of transactional data, and what computers today can do that they couldn't even do 5 years ago, nonetheless 10 years ago, to even be able to get this. Because you and I talked pre-show about the fact that I don't know that at least in the restaurant space that it was nearly as easy to get to this stuff 10 years ago or 15 years ago. While everybody knew that there was a problem, it was hard. And it was hard to get to it, and it was hard to get to the transactional data. But more and more technology is getting to a place where it's smart enough to learn these things and adapt to what it is that you're doing. You know, many of us have Alexas or Google Homes and that you talk to, and it contextually starts to understand what you're asking about, and it knows those things. And I think so much of our audience, because they're not on the tech space, don't quite comprehend what AI and machine learning looks like and why it can continue to pivot and change and do different things for brands as they're working with it.
Yeah, well, so we actually tend to look at it the opposite way of that. Okay. So the way we look at it is from a customer's perspective, as from an operator standpoint, the last thing I need is another thing that I have to do, another thing that I have to measure, another thing I have to report on or file to send in. You know, so our focus is on simplicity, and I think it should be for most of the you know, technology vendors in the restaurant space. So what it looks like on our end is we usually just get API access, which allows us to tap into live data, and that all seamlessly moves over to the cloud, and it all gets processed. And really, all that matters for the operator is they're given a daily prep sheet with the actual information that they need, not, you know, analytics and numbers and graphs. You know, what restaurant operators need to know is just the simple, tell me what I need to prep.
And when so dig into that then. So, you know, you ran a sandwich brand before you came over to and created Clear Cogs. I'm guessing every day you guys had to prep some form of bread. You know, you had, you know, three different types of bread. Let's just leave it at that. You know, you had flatbread, you had wheat bread, you had white bread, I'm guessing. Talk to me a little bit about what does it look like from an operator's perspective? How do you decide what to predict for them, not to predict for them, times a day? Do you guys track shelf life? Do you guys track prep time? Do you guys track, you know, talk to me a little bit about that, because to your point, it almost seems like there's no way it can be as simple as we want to talk about. But I know it is after talking with you. I'm like blown away that there's stuff out there that can do these things, because it seems like it's mountains and mountains of data and mountains of work to really figure some of this stuff out.
Well, so first off, I'm clearly not smart enough to have done it. So we have really, really smart machine learning and AI guys and data scientists, and they do some incredible, all of the things you mentioned, they're basically doing from lead times, shelf lives. But you know, if you're running a sandwich shop, right, and let's say you're baking your own bread, I think what most people would be surprised about is a lot of times you're playing it by feel. You're I don't feel like I have enough bread. I usually should have more bread around now. Let's bake some more bread. You're in this constant reacting state, based on what's going on. And, you know, being able to just provide operators, you know, hourly par levels, you know, product amount required. So that they know, hey, I'm supposed to have 20 loaves of bread right now, and I only have 18. I should probably bake some more bread. You know, that makes a big difference.
I love it. And to your point, there's a lot of data that goes into that. But I love the simplicity idea that says just hand it to the assistant manager that says this is what you should be prepping today, rather than going through and having them do it based on feel. Because to your point earlier in the conversation, if they don't have enough, then sales go down. If they have too much, then they end up wasting it.
But what I would say is this: restaurant forecasting is almost gotten a bad name because, you know, there's been things on your back of the house software that do forecasting. They don't really do a very good job. And you've got operators who, you know, I equate it to weather in the 80s, right? Like you read the newspaper and they'd say, hey, it's going to rain today, and you'd walk outside and it's sunny. You know, you'd be better off going with your gut than listening to whatever you heard in the newspaper. You know, that's kind of where we've been in restaurants for, you know, ever, where the operator on the ground, no matter what you told him, like, he had a sense of it, right? He's sticking his head out the window. It's like, okay, you know, it's kind of a nice day out. And, you know, we're kind of going into summer. I'm going to bake a little extra. I'm going to have a little extra chicken on hand. And they did better than any of the software that was ever out there. That totally flips when you start bringing in machine learning and AI. It's able to just collect so much more of that data. Like you said, I mean, we're looking at millions and millions of, you know, data points to make these predictions. And between the AI machine learning side of it, the availability of data, and the, you know, now low cost of processing that data, you can now just blow that out of the water. It's really kind of horse and buggy to the automobile. There's just almost different things.
Well, and I think that I've talked about a lot on the podcast recently is people's propensity to, because there's been such significant change in the last 18, 24, 36 months between COVID and supply chain issues, people got burned really badly, like you said, years ago. And I feel like people's propensity to actually look at computers to help make their business better rather than give them something else to do is a huge paradigm shift. Are you guys seeing that as you guys are going out and talking to clients?
Yeah, no question. I also think there's another force that's at play. I was listening to some smarter people than me talk about this, and I thought it was really insightful. They basically said, you know, back in the 90s when software started taking off, all the great software guys went out to Silicon Valley, and, you know, restaurants kind of ended up with the third tier leftover guys. And you know, as a result, you ended up with, you know, okay-ish software. And that paradigm has shifted. And now all of a sudden, you're seeing really smart, cutting-edge programmers coming into this space and bringing a lot of that, you know, I call it that A talent and A solutions. And the other thing that I think that's converging on that is you're starting to see software that's not built from a software perspective, but more from an operator's perspective. So you start to see operators come in and say, like, this is how it should be designed, and designing it around their needs and not just what's a scalable solution. And I think that makes a huge difference.
Well, and we talk about it often on the show. It's like tech for tech's sake doesn't do anything for anybody.
Yeah.
Tech to solve business problems. And the one thing that I love about your story is that you're really scratching an itch that you had. Like, you had this itch as an operator, and you're looking at it and going, you know what? I see this problem every day. I saw this problem every single day when I was going into my sandwich places, and I get it. I get that this problem exists, and I get that if I would have had something like what ClearCogs can do, how much extra money I would have made, how much extra time I would have had on my hands, how much extra I would have been able to lead my team to do the right things through software and through technology, rather than having some crazy Excel spreadsheet or whatever else that you might have been doing that may or may not have the data behind it to back it up, right?
Well, and Jeremy, I'd love to get your take on this. So one of the things that we see a lot of recently is, you know, ClearCogs is a great example. We do one thing and we do it really well, and that is predictive demand forecasting for your food, right? And that stands in contrast to, let's call it the one-size-fits-all platforms that have every tool imaginable, and they're all like, okay. You know, how do you see that in the future? Do you see it, you know, still being a one-size-fits-all market? Or do you see
I mean, I can riff on this for a while, and I appreciate you giving me an opportunity. Again, longtime listeners know that my philosophy is while some standard is better than no standard at all, and having some solution for what you guys are doing is better than having zero technological solution, my opinion is you should find the best point solution for what it is that your business needs and find it. Make sure it integrates with your tech. It integrates seamlessly, so you're not constantly on the phone with ClearCogs or your point of sale vendor or your back office vendor to make sure that they're doing what they need to do. Because to your point, once the operator has to take one or two extra steps and he doesn't see the value in it, he stops using it. It's gone by the wayside, and nobody does anything. The second piece to that I would say, Matt, is really as consumers are getting more power and having more options, they are forcing the tech vendors to talk better to each other. Years and years ago, and again, you and I talked about this pre-show, years and years ago, the POS vendor or, you know, these technology vendors had so much power that they didn't, you know, the consumer didn't, the restaurateur didn't have options. And so because they didn't have options and it was really expensive to replace your point of sale, the tech vendor that was in there pretty much just said, piss off, this is what you get. And nowadays, between the advent of just open APIs and the ability to have multiple things talk to each other, I think it's imperative that you make sure that you fix a lot of these things with point-based solutions that can do what you guys are doing. And the thing I said to you pre-show as well that I get every once in a while I get concerned about is that somebody like you that does such a fantastic job of predictive forecasting that you get gobbled up by one of these big guys and you get consumed into only working with one or two technology vendors rather than being able to solve tens of thousands of restaurants' problems out there.
Yeah. I think that whole thing is really interesting. And I really do think we're going through a new wave of technology in the restaurant industry. And I think it's fortuitous timing, given the pandemic and inflation and climate and all those kinds of things. It seems to be a period of great uncertainty in the industry.
But with that, and just like every other time of great uncertainty, you get people that are doing some really cool stuff that are changing the way that we think about those things. And so I've got two other lines before we sign off for today, Matt. And the first of which is how much has the advent of these different ordering modes and what we like to call four-wall economics, you know, when you were running the sandwich shops, I would guess, you know, well, knowing the brand that you were working for, and we don't necessarily need to mention it, you probably had a mix that was inside the four walls and outside the four walls. But for most brands out there, they had stuff that was in-house versus stuff that was coming in through DoorDash versus stuff that was coming in through online ordering. Across the board, those needs are different. Those needs for prep are different. Those needs for production are different because you've got, you know, you got certain time frames, and they may hit sales when they deliver the DoorDash order, but it really needs to happen 30 minutes earlier. How have you guys tackled that and really not just predicting, you know, what food needs to be prepped for dine-in, but as you're opening up e-commerce and you're opening up third-party delivery, talk to me a little bit about what monkey wrench that threw into the product and kind of how you guys helped solve for it.
Yeah, and so that's where I keep going back to, you know, not being a software solution so much as a predictive forecasting vendor. Because at the end of the day, everyone's got all of these different channels, and they're constantly changing, right?
Yep.
And until somebody goes in to understand that problem from the operator's perspective, it doesn't work. And then you throw limited time offerings in there.
Oh, yeah.
Hours changes. You know, there's so much that goes into it. But, you know, these are all solvable things. They're all things that can be tackled. It's just finding the vendor that wants to go actually do that versus just provide you the easiest answer that checks the box.
Love that. And again, I think that in talking with operators, that's one of the biggest challenges that they're finding is predicting for sales and food production and labor, because sales fluctuate. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, like Tuesday night was the slowest night, but for whatever reason, I talked to one brand that's a big publicly traded company. They're like, Tuesday is better than Fridays were before the pandemic because, you know, mom's out at soccer practice and she picks up, you know, this casual dining brand on her way home from, because they opened that up, and it was really tough for them to kind of make sure that they had the right product and even the right staffing on to be able to serve that guest during that time.
Well, and when you're using sales as your basis for how much do I need to prep, right? Mm-hmm. You run into all these problems that what I buy on Tuesday lunch is substantially different than Friday night. And I think that most operators would be really surprised when they went and looked at it, just how much these things fluctuate.
Yeah. Well, and that, I think that that's really kind of the last line of questioning that I wanted to go down for you, Matt, is talk to me about some success that you guys have found with some clients that are already implemented the system. Where was it at before? What did it help them with? What did waste go from and to, you know, like talk to me a little bit about what does it look like? So I'm going to engage with you and I want to put this into my brand and I'm doing $1 million a year and I've got X amount in food costs. Talk to me a little bit about what might it look like if I decided that I wanted to move forward with you after I get done with this call and I'm a restaurant operator and I'm like, this guy killed it. How do we figure it out?
Yeah. So our process is a little unique as opposed to some other solutions out there. What we do is a real white gloved 4 to 6 week onboarding process. So when we go engage with a brand, we do a 1 week, what we call signal analysis, where we go process their data just to see how it responds to machine learning and to see what kind of those patterns are. And we go back to them. And if it's not a fit for us, it's not a fit for them, then, you know, it's like no harm, no foul, get out of Dodge before we invest too much time and energy into this. And then the next phase of it really is us going in and understanding your pain points. You know, is it your guy on the night shift that just needs to decide, do I need to prep more chicken? Is it, you know, how much product do I need to lay out 2 days in advance and put in the marinade? You know, we go in and understand their individual business needs. And that what that looks like, it's not a really difficult thing for the brands. It's like, sit down for an hour and just walk us through all of this. And then we go through and we run the analysis, and everybody's got different levels of waste, and we figure out what that waste is. And typically, we can statistically reduce like 85% of that waste to go
away. Wow, that's insane.
Yeah. Now, it never actually works out that way because, look, you're in restaurants, you got operators, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's all kinds of things that go into it. But we see about 50% reduction in waste as a result of over prep. And it's from the user's perspective, easier than going and dealing with an Excel spreadsheet, you know, just to already have the report. We usually have people up and running in about 6 weeks for them to do a pilot and see the results for themselves.
I love it. Just because I'm personally inquisitive, where do you find that most people, I guess, choose to adopt? Because, you know, if I've got 3,000 products in my kitchen, I'm guessing salt and pepper is probably not something that I'm worried about wasting, but I'm probably worried about wasting my avocados, and I'm worried about wasting my beef, and I'm worried about wasting my chicken, you know, potentially, you know. Talk to me a little bit about even that decision-making process, because no different than when you might implement a perpetual inventory system, you pick your high dollar items first and work your way down versus let's go measure salt and pepper and ketchup, because really those aren't going to move the needle much.
So I think that it's interesting that you brought up the salt and pepper, because I think it's very representative of the you know, your back of the house software says we're doing predictive forecasting, and then they're telling you like salt and pepper packets that you need. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's almost as important to not be including that information and to just be focusing on the things that actually matter so that you're not cluttering all of this. But where we tend to put our focus in is at the very end of the supply chain. So when you're bringing product in and you're getting a Sysco or US Foods or somebody's, you know, these orders, that stuff's usually relatively stable. But the moment you bake that bread or you prep that chicken, you know, you now have cut the shelf life down substantially. So we tend to focus on that prepped food and how much of it to have, just because it's a more challenging problem for operators. And it's almost always, you know, proteins and breads.
Well, and at the end of the day, those are the things that take time to actually prep. You know, if I got to take a head of lettuce out of the walk-in, I got to take a head of lettuce out of the walk-in and cut it down. Like, that's not that big of a deal for a salad. Whereas, you know, prepping a marinated chicken breast for you know, fajitas takes time. It takes time to marinate it. It takes time to prep it. It takes time to break it down and all of that.
But Jeremy, I think that the key there is, you know, it's about setting your team up for success.
Yes.
Right. And all of that that you just described creates a lot of uncertainty. It creates more stress. And being able to provide those tools and that information, you know, especially now that we've got such high turnover and you've lost a lot of institutional knowledge and I got to bring in a new manager from a new place, you know, when everything was stable, you could get away with it. But it's a lot of tension between employees and owners and franchisors. And also, you know, from the franchisor perspective, I mean, the idea that you could just say, hey, I'm okay with running out of product once ever, you know, because if you talk to a franchisor, they say, I don't want to ever stock out anytime. It's like, great. You know, it's going to cost, you're going to have $150 a day in waste. And they're like, okay, well, what if it was once every quarter that we run out of something? Okay, now we get the number down even lower. I mean, we've got this great tool that we allows operators to actually visualize this, where they can take a slider and say, like, hey, I want my prep to be at, you know, I'm good with this balance of waste to stockouts. And you know, you can imagine, as being a CEO of a company that's got thousands of locations, if I wanted to say, let's make the box more profitable for our franchisees, you know, and they're like, you know, by doing that, maybe we can cut down on the prep, so we're not wasting as much. They then are going to their COO, who's going to, you know, the director of ops, who's then going to these regional directors that are going to go to area managers, that are going to go to owners, that are going to go to the general managers, that may go to the assistant manager. You know, like, to be able to, as the CEO of that company, just take a lever and be like, I want to move the needle over here, you know, to make the box more profitable. Or, look, we're running out too much. I want to move the needle over here, and just have it instantly implemented into all of your restaurants without, you know, having to change the culture and the policy around it. You know, it's an empowerment for a lot of these companies.
That's amazing. That sounds like a freaking remarkable tool to be able to do that, because I think all too often we leave it in the hands of the operators and they go do whatever they want to do. Yeah. And as we talked about earlier, it doesn't work. So Matt, at this point, if I'm one of those restaurant operators that's sitting here listening to the show going, you know what, why don't I already have ClearCox? Why have I not heard of them? How do I get involved? How do I, you know, talk to me a little bit about what it might look like if they were to engage with one of your team members and start to look at, you know, you talked about post kind of sale, but pre-sale, do they get on the website? Do they hit you up on LinkedIn? Talk to me about our website
and you can schedule a meeting right there. And it's just that simple. And the reason you haven't heard of ClearCox is we're a newer company. And the reason you haven't heard of the solution, it didn't exist. And it's one of those, you know, it's, we spend more time talking with companies and just explaining, like, okay, it is possible to reduce food waste and reduce your stockouts at the same time. And this isn't, you know, hocus pocus. This is actual, like, proven statistical models. And, you know, again, it's post office versus Amazon. I mean, if you had never heard of Amazon before, and Amazon just magically appeared, you'd be like, there's no way they can get me the product at half the price, deliver it to my house, and have it here the same day.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the reaction we spend most of our time talking with people about.
Yeah, I've got kids and they're like, well, just order it. It'll be here tomorrow. I'm like, that's not the way the world is supposed to work. We either have to leave the house and go get it, or we have to wait a week, because that's the way it should work. Not, I've got it here this afternoon. And so, well, I just hope that once you make it famous, Matt, that we can still be friends and you can say, I heard about it here first on the RTG podcast.
You kidding me? I'm going to be back. We're going to be chatting and talking about the next way to help operators.
I love it. Well, for our listeners, guys, we know that you guys have got thousands, tens of thousands of choices of what you guys can listen to. So we appreciate you guys giving us time each and every week when we post one of these. Matt, to you, thank you to you and your team for really making an operator-friendly tool that's going to help make businesses better. And you know what? When one restaurant operator gets better, we all get better. And I love that that's kind of where you guys are at.
Amen. Well, Jeremy, thank you for having me. And this has been fantastic. Hope to talk with you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.